Call the next case, please.
Bailey et al. against County of Loudoun et al. 50 East 10th and Roswell Center for the Appellant, Leslie A. Winterberg for the Appellant.
Wait just a minute. All right, you may proceed.
May it please the Court. My name is Tim Boston, and I represent the appellants, the 14 patrol deputies from Loudoun County. At the outset, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case provides this Court its first opportunity to address the Virginia Gap Pay Act, which is found at Virginia Code 9.1-700-785. And under the facts of this case, to analyze three creative attempts by the Sheriff's Office to avoid complying with the Act. The Gap Act provides primarily two additional benefits not found under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act to deputies as it relates to overtime. The first one is the deputies have to be paid overtime after 80 hours and before 86 hours, which is the federal threshold for a two-week pay period for deputies. The second benefit provided by the Act is that for purposes of calculating overtime, the Act requires not only that work hours be included in the calculation, but also that hours where a deputy is in a paid status, such as leave time, also be included in the calculation. Despite notice in 2005 of the passage of the Act, and also a provision by the county's Human Resource Office of the specific terms of the Act, the sheriff in 2008 implemented a policy, called what he called flexible scheduling. And there were three policies, and they're reflected in our three assignments of error. Those three practices or policies were the deputy leave policy, the exchange time policy, and the forced flexing policy. It is our position that all three policies violate the statute, but the forced flexing policy also violated the employee handbook that was in place at the time. And I'd like to address the three in turn. The first policy we refer to as deputy leave. This was, and this is reflected in our first assignment of error. This is the policy where if a deputy had taken leave during a pay period and also had worked overtime hours in that same pay period, the sheriff's office would not allow them to take that leave. That leave would be debited back into their leave bank, thereby ensuring that they were not paid overtime during that pay period. Now, this action by the sheriff blatantly violates the specific terms of Virginia Code 9.1703, which requires that a deputy be paid, quote, for all hours in which a deputy is in a paid status, unquote. This means that under Virginia law, leave, holiday, similar hours had to be counted when calculating overtime. The sheriff, as I mentioned earlier, was explicitly instructed by the county's Human Resource Office exactly what should be included in paid status. The county told them it was annual leave, sick leave, administrative leave, exchange time, and holidays. The county also told them that those hours should be included when calculating overtime. Despite that instruction, when we asked Deputy Sheriff Lieutenant Colonel Gibson at the trial if he had complied with the Human Resource Memo, he had to admit that he had not. And additionally, when we asked if his actions had been related to the deputy leave policy had violated the Gap Pay Act, he also responded that yes, they did violate the law. Despite the clarity of the law in this area and the clear violation as admitted to by the Sheriff's Office, the trial court found that the deputy leave policy did not violate the Act. The ruling was clear error, and we would ask this court to reverse as the assignment of error one. The second practice, which is reflected in our second assignment of error, is what we call exchange time. This is where the sheriff would allow a deputy to bank their gap hours, those hours between 80 and 86 hours, so the 6 hours. It allowed them to bank those hours in exchange for future leave. And the practice would have been acceptable, even under the code. The problem was they weren't allowed to bank those hours for time and a half. Now, Virginia Code 9.1...
Counsel, before you get to the merits on this, can you discuss the procedural problem with this claim not being set forth in the complaint?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellees had raised that issue after the trial had concluded. I think it's worth pointing out, first, that in our complaint, I've looked this up, obviously, it's paragraph 63 and 70 of our complaint, we refer to this statute, the 9.1701. We felt like exchange time is a type of debiting leave. It's the debiting of those leave hours into an exchange bank, but it's still a debiting leave type scenario. And though we didn't use the word exchange time, we felt like it was pled sufficiently to give notice in our complaint. I think it's also worth pointing out that the trial court never raised this issue. And anything that any statements from the court and their opinions in the orders, the judge never raised a concern about the plea. And in fact, had awarded for count one exchange time, even though we didn't plead it specifically in count one any more specifically than we pled it in count three. And the failure by the appellee for trial to object to this evidence that came in, as the court has found in the Morris case, is a waiver. And therefore, I believe that issue is no longer important to the court. Now,
let me ask you a question, counsel. Does the employee have to take the exchange? Does he have to exchange his hours, or can he get paid overtime during the time period?
It was voluntary. Those hours, and I should say, they did go back and retroactively pay them for hours that they actually had worked between 80 and 86. They paid them overtime for those hours. But at this point, and they didn't pay them overtime for the exchange hours because they didn't show up as hours worked. But at this point, these were straight time hours, the way the sheriff was treating them, which was obviously a violation of the law, those hours between 80 and 86.
Does it matter that the employee had the choice of either getting paid or put it over to exchange to a comp time or exchange hours?
No, Your Honor. As the federal courts, who have a long history with FLSA, have looked at this, they've all found that an employee cannot agree to do what's in derivation of the statute. And this, I didn't get to it, but this is specifically in violation of the statute. In 701A, it states that all leave, as under the Fair Labor Standards Act, 29 U.S.C. 207-0, which is the compensatory time paradigm in the federal law, all leave, if you're going to give credit for that leave, it has to be at a rate of not less than 1 1/2 times the employee's regular rate of pay. So the statute specifically says, if you're going to comp the leave, it has to be 1.5 times. And no, an employee cannot agree to do what's a violation of that statute. And I think it's worth pointing out, I think we pointed out in our brief, if they could, then every employer would get their employee to, quote-unquote, agree, you know, we'll let you do this.
Okay.
Like, you know, not paying a minimum wage or something. Well, do you want a job? We'll pay less than minimum wage. Do you agree?
Okay.
That cannot be allowed, and it's not been allowed in any federal case addressing the issue.
But that's not an allegation of this case. I mean, in this case, these employees could have gotten paid that week they earned the leave, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and retroactively, if they had known that and if they had done that, they may have been paid their overtime half that they never got because it went to an exchange rate.
Okay.
So, but I think it's important to point out, Lieutenant Colonel Gibson testified that these deputies never got paid their halftime on that exchange time. That's in the record. I believe that addresses the exchange time provision. I'll move to the third assignment of error, which is what we call forced flexing. Now, this relates to the process where an employee was required to work non-regularly scheduled hours earlier in a pay period and then was sent home or told not to even come in on certain work days later in the pay period. As a statutory matter, we believe this creative timekeeping technique violates the terms and the intent of the statute. In Virginia Code 9.1700, it defines what regularly scheduled work hours were meant to be. And the legislature states clearly that those hours are meant to be recurring and fixed within the work period. And it also says that do not include on-call, extra duty assignments, or any other non-recurring and non-fixed hours, which is exactly what these non-regularly scheduled hours early in the pay period would have been. The code also states in 9.1702 that the work period must be recurring and fixed, and the work period cannot be changed for purposes of denying overtime compensation to employees. Clearly, the actions by the sheriff did, in fact, change the work period for these deputies.
Explain that to me. How did that happen? Because I don't understand that. It seems to me change of the work period means my ordinary work period is from Sunday to 2 weeks from Sunday. And changing it would be that because I've got so many hours, then we're going to change the work period from this Sunday to next Wednesday or something like that. That seems to me to be changing the work period. That's not what happened in this case.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that the term work period is not defined in the code. And we see that as, if you're told your schedule is you're going to work one day on, 2 days off, 2 days on, and that was their schedule. And then the sheriff says, okay, well, you're going to work 2 extra days at the beginning of your work period, and then not 2 days at the end. We feel like that is, in a broad sense, and as we pointed out, this is a remedial statute. The purpose of the statute was specifically to pay these deputies for their non-regularly scheduled hours. And this is exactly what the sheriff was getting around. So we feel like the statute should be construed liberally, and I would admit it needs to be construed liberally to find this, to make this finding. But it should be. And if it is construed liberally, then I do feel like that is a change in their work period. If you're saying you're going to work now 2 days earlier in the period and not 2 days later, it's totally changing the work period.
Well, if I don't agree that it's, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, if I don't agree it's a change in the work period, have you got another argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
The second one, and related to the statutory paradigm, I would say that it also violates the intent of the law. And we've cited the Walling case in the U.S. Supreme Court, which has found that these kind of approaches to getting around the overtime laws are a sham, and they should not be allowed. And you can imagine, every sheriff in the state could create ways to get around this law. But the purpose of the law, as I said before, the reason the legislature passed this law was to stop this kind of behavior where the deputies are required to stay 6 hours over on a certain day with no extra pay, and then, you know, here, not allowed to work later on a regular scheduled day when we plan to be at work. And so the intent, we feel like the intent is frustrated by the actions of the sheriff. Additionally, though, we also have a contract argument related to the employee handbook. As this court has held in Progress Printing Company, the rights which have already vested, and the court was referring to employee handbooks there, the rights which have already vested in the employee are enforceable for the period of time during which these rights existed. And as we pointed out in our briefs in the trial, the employee handbook had two provisions that stipulated how flexible scheduling had to be handled for the sheriff's office. The first one was the time had to be arranged between an employee and a supervisor with a department head's approval. And the second one was there had to be a reasonable amount of time afforded to the employee to accommodate the adjustment. The testimony trial was clear as to both of those issues. There was not an agreement for the deputies to to flex their time. That was forced against them. The testimony was that it was mandatory and that it was a frequent occurrence at the department. And additionally, no notice was provided to these deputies. When they showed up to work that day, then they would be told, we're going to flex however many hours, or go home, you're not working today. So we believe these actions violated the rights provided in the employee handbook.
Well, how do you get around the language of the handbook that talks about the handbook encourages flexible scheduling? Is that part of the handbook? I think it's under 4.203A. The county supports flexible scheduling if it's arranged between the employee and the supervisor with the department head's approval.
Right. I don't think they had
arranged. Is the same thing as agreed, or what?
This was an argument at the trial level, and we said whatever arranged might be, giving you no discretion in the matter is not arranging it. I mean, they were told it was forced against them, against their will. This was a very upsetting policy for these deputies. The primary reason why they brought this case, because this is, you can imagine these deputies, some of them, Loudoun County is an expensive county, and they have to travel about an hour to get there because they live far away. They get dressed, you know, get all their uniform on, they get there, and they're told, oh, sorry, you're not working today. Or you need to go home in 2 hours and not work a 12-hour shift, even though you planned for that, you got child care taken care of. You can imagine, this is not arranged. This was forced against their will. They did not like it.
Okay.
I'd like to reserve it.
All right.
May it please the court. My name is Leslie Winneberger. I'm here on behalf of the Loudoun County Sheriff and the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office.
Counsel.
Yes.
I want to just go right to the heart of the matter, and okay. It's on page 700 of the Joint Appendix.
Okay.
We read each case, we've got hundreds if not thousands of pages before us, and we long for an aha moment or a smoking gun, as
right.
The case may be. We rarely find it. With regard to this particular statute, we are allowed to take judicial notice of the official records of the General Assembly that appear on their website with regard to the votes that were taken, the dates they were taken, the fiscal impact statements that were filed, things of that nature. This was a very controversial piece of legislation. It went back and forth. It did not pass through unanimously. It had significant debate, and all of that we were permitted to take judicial notice of. Contemporaneous with that legislation, which was passed during the 2005 session and was going to take effect on July 1, 2005, there was a contemporaneous interpretation by Loudoun County of what that legislation did. Appears to be pretty accurate. And here's the paragraph. What's the impact? Quote, essentially within your regularly scheduled work hours, all hours in a paid status, including hours actually worked, are counted as hours of actual work. Paid status includes, but is not limited to, annual leave, sick leave, administrative leave, exchange time, personal leave, bereavement leave, FMLA paid, injury leave, court leave, military leave, and liberal leave. Holidays are also included as hours of work towards your eligibility for overtime. Counsel, it does not appear that the Sheriff's Office complied with that very specific direction. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I think that the Sheriff's Office took a different approach to it. And the reason I say that is because the sheriff is a constitutional officer.
The General Assembly passed a statute expecting it would apply to sheriff. This was only for sheriff's offices and police departments, and there were only a few of them that was directed at.
Well, it was actually for law enforcement and fire. And in this
it was already in effect for fire. They just simply grafted in law enforcement.
I'm sorry.
It was already in effect for fire.
Right.
The General Assembly grafted in law enforcement.
Law enforcement. And in most cases, I don't think that would encompass a sheriff's office. Because typically, a sheriff's office is doing civil process, running the jail.
Loudoun County.
Loudoun is different. I grew up there, so Loudoun also does the policing arm of it.
Yes, sir.
So in that sense, I don't know that all sheriffs thought that this was going to apply.
This was not really directed at all sheriffs. It was directed at a very small number, as we both know.
Right.
And Loudoun
is
one of
them. And over 100 employees, I believe, you have to have.
Yes. So in other words, it was large jurisdictions that were finding creative ways to not pay overtime. And the General Assembly very clearly intended to stop that.
But in this case, I think where there's a difference is the county has employees that are employed for a certain number of hours every week. The sheriff's office is very different. They run on different hours and different shifts than what you consider the most 9-to-5 employees. So the argument of the appellant presupposes that all of these deputies are entitled to a regular schedule. And I don't think that's what they're entitled to.
You're not entitled to a regular schedule. You're simply entitled to overtime once you hit the magic number of hours of 80. It's pretty simple.
Right.
And this memo hit the nail on the head in terms of what you have to count in order to get up to 80.
But what I'm saying is, and if you look in the appendix, which I don't have the page numbers with me, there were 4 timesheets that were entered into evidence in this case, even though there were 14 flex time deputies is what we've been calling them. Those timesheets specifically state or describe their schedule as varied. So they weren't necessarily entitled to a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shift. They were, in this case, evidence showed, entitled to 80.5 hours, but not to a certain schedule. And I think the argument has been with the appellants that if they work, 9-to-2 one day, that means if they later work, 5-to-7, that they're entitled to overtime. And they're saying that the sheriff has no way to control that over time. And I think that's what's wrong.
I mean, that's a response to assignment of error number 3, is it not?
Right.
Okay. What
right.
about the rest of it?
Well, so the first problem I think we have is that the appellant suggests they're entitled to a certain schedule. But they also believe that they're entitled to overtime and that the sheriff can't exercise any control over it. It's accrual. But I don't think this is true or realistic. The sheriff's needs can change at a moment's notice. And as I said before, Loudoun County also provides the policing arm for the county. So he may need to respond to a natural disaster, a terrorist attack, political visits, whatever's going on.
That's a rupture, counsel, but you're not really talking about the debiting leave or the exchange hours, which is what the memo that Justice Mims has read to you.
Okay, well, I guess I was going back. I think we were talking about the exchange hours and the debiting leave just now.
Okay, well,
I thought
you were trying to get to that, yeah.
Forced flexing. So Virginia Code 9.172.
Always say, I'm not talking about the forced flexing. I think his question was about the debiting leave and the exchange hours, wasn't it?
Right, but I thought he wanted me to go to the other assignments of error.
Those are the other assignments of error.
All right, maybe
that's one and two. Yeah, one and two. One is the debiting leave, and two is exchange hours.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, even if the policies as enacted by the sheriff were in violation, we're arguing that this court doesn't even need to get there. They failed to prove their case, and that's what it came down to. They never made a claim for exchange time in their complaint or their amended complaint. And then only 3 of 14 of the flex time deputies ever testified in this case. And unlike the adult detention center deputies that were plaintiffs in the trial court, they all had different claims. It wasn't the same for each of the 14 flex time deputies. One of the testifying deputies admitted he was confused. He didn't even know if he was tracking his flex time properly. The other flex time deputy admitted he didn't track his flex time hours until they went electronic, which was in January 2011. So basically, the court was left with flex time claims based on the memories of their schedule up to 3 years after the fact.
So your defense is Loudoun County knew prior to July 2005 what the law was. The sheriff's office was informed prior to July 1, 2005, what the law was. The sheriff's office, for whatever reason, has chosen not to comply with the law. But these deputies, because they weren't able to track every single hour over a multi-year period, can't come in front of the Supreme Court wanting relief.
Well, first, I don't think the evidence in the trial was clear that the sheriff's office knew in 2005. There was some question throughout. I know that there's that memo. I believe it's from Susan Hatt.
Yes.
There was some question throughout the trial as to whether or not anyone from the sheriff's office actually got a copy of the memo. The only person that testified that she may have gotten a copy of the memo was a human resources employee. No one else even recalled getting the memo.
Counsel, I'm sorry. This was a major piece of legislation. The court can't take judicial notice that Sheriff Simpson knew of it, but Sheriff Simpson knew of it. There's no doubt. How can you say, well, we didn't know what this memo said? I mean, I'm sorry. I'm venting at this point, and it's not your fault. I apologize. I take that back.
Unfortunately, I come in when this.
I understand that, and I'm not directing it at you.
Let me change the pace then.
Sure.
You still haven't answered any question about the debiting leave and exchange hours. Are you conceding that those are good claims?
They could be. But I do not think they proved their case.
Well, let's stop. There's two points to it. Do you acknowledge that the policies, let's forget about the proof at trial, do you acknowledge that the policies that the sheriff used with regard to debiting leave and exchange time violated the act?
I acknowledge that they implemented the policies as described by the appellants in this case, but I don't think the act is clear on whether or not what he did was a violation. And if you look at the act does not give them entitle the deputies to a regular schedule. All of entitled.
That's what you're talking about. I'm talking about the debiting of leave.
Right.
We're off the forced flexing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
We're on the debiting of the leave and the exchange hours. You've acknowledged that the policies as they described were in place.
Yes.
Tell me why that did not violate the act.
Because I think if you look at, they define regularly scheduled hours at the very beginning of the act. And then in 703, in the hours of work section, they actually say what you have to count in computing that time. But what I'm saying is they're talking about during your regularly scheduled work hours, that the deputies did not have regularly scheduled work hours.
Well, a regularly scheduled work period was 2 weeks, I think.
Yes, they did. But not a regular schedule. They weren't entitled to a regular schedule. I don't think this requires the sheriff to give them that.
Well, does it matter for the debiting leave or the exchange hours? Because if they work those hours, they get paid for it, don't they?
Yes.
Well, then it doesn't matter what their work period was. And they proved that they worked hours during the work period, and if they also took sick leave, then the sheriff arbitrarily just exchanged sick leave hours for their overtime. And that he can't do under the statute, can he? Do you concede that?
I concede that.
Thanks.
But what I'm saying is I don't think the court has to get there. In particular, the expert's calculations in this case were incorrect. Now, I know that the appellant said that we never objected to the expert's report. I didn't realize this was going to be an issue, but I went back and looked, and on the second day of trial, in the trial transcript at page 35, which is not a part of this appendix, the court ruled that the expert's report, it went to the weight. He overruled our objection on both hearsay and on the fact that the underlying assumptions were incorrect on which it was based. He said it went to the weight, and then he overruled our objection and noted our objection for the record. I think that's what happened here, is that the trial court took the expert's report into account, did not give it much weight, and then denied the claims found in favor of the sheriff's office on the flex time claims.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry. Is it your position that the judge just didn't believe him? It's not a question of law. You're saying it's a question of proof.
Right.
And
exactly.
The judge is, he understood the law, but he says they just didn't prove those things, and that's
right.
Why I didn't give it to him.
Right.
Where can I glean that from what the trial court said in its letter opinion?
Unfortunately, the trial court, all he did was find in favor of us on the flex time claims. So we can only surmise that because he found in our favor, he didn't feel that the proof was such that they had proved their case.
We don't know that. If we conclude that the policies violated the statute, why wouldn't it be appropriate to send this back to the trial court to determine, based on the evidence already in the record, whether they're entitled to damages, and if so, how much?
Well, if the court does think that these were violations and it does remand, I think our biggest concern was that we don't want the appellants, in this case, to get a second bite at the apple. We don't want them to have a chance to now enter evidence that they did not at the trial court.
I understand.
Level. Are there any other questions? Thank you.
I think the court has touched on all the important issues, and I think that's good grasp. I just wanted to say a couple of things following up. Relating to this issue of the sufficiency of the evidence, I think it's worth pointing out that really this goes to damages. There was no dispute as to these policies at the trial. They were clearly proven that these policies were implemented and that they violated the law, in our opinion. And even this issue of we didn't bring all 14 patrol deputies, even though this was a multi-plaintiff action, and the trial court, after we brought two, said, do you have a third one? Do we have to do this? Again, there was no objection to us using representative deputies. We believe the evidence was very clear as to all 14 deputies. But I would say that if the court was concerned about our proof for the other 11 who weren't there, he still should have ruled in our favor. These are multi-plaintiff cases. Each plaintiff should be taken individually. And the court should have ruled in favor if it was a proof problem of the three deputies that we did bring. And
can I ask you a question? Why do you think that the judge ruled against you as a matter of law as opposed to as a matter of a failure of proof?
Again, I think counsel's correct. He did not state anything to that effect in his orders. The reasons we believe so is because what the court did state in his opinion, he basically jumbled, we thought, all three of our claims into one claim and said under 702, the sheriff can mess with the hours within the work period all he wants. So we felt like his statement in his opinion was that it was a matter of law. And also for the reasons I just stated, that he didn't rule in our favor for the three representatives who were there, did prove their damages. And also, it should be pointed out, the same expert report that they say didn't have credibility was applied wholesale for count one for the adult detention center deputies. So the court, and the judge never stated he had any concerns about that expert's report or his opinion. So that was a new issue raised on appeal that was not brought up to the trial court. I believe my time is up.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Court is adjourned.
All right.